Brainwaves, hear the world differently, bringing community mental health to you, raising awareness and challenging stigma. Tune in to 3CR Community Radio, Wednesdays at 5 p.m.
Melbourne's Drive Time Radio program, featuring community organisations, powerful stories and information. Find us at brainwaves.org.au. Proudly sponsored by Wellways Australia.
I would like to begin by paying my respects to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which I am coming to you from today. Land where at Brainwaves we tell our stories, and land where the traditional custodians have told their stories for many, many years before us, and continue to tell their stories. I would like to pay my respects to Elders past and present, and acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners who are listening today.
Hello and welcome to Brainwaves on 3CR 855am, 3CR Digital Radio and 3cr.org.au. My name is Mark and today we're chatting to Dr. Negan Hassam-Shariati from Neuroscience Research Australia. She's joining us this evening to talk about a recent study she and her colleague Professor Sylvia Gustin conducted on the connection between psychological and social well-being and pain after spinal cord surgery. Hello, Negin. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Hi, Mark. Thank you so much for having me.
So I suppose just to get us started, would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners and share a bit about your background with the School of Psychology at the University of New South Wales and Neuroscience Research Australia?
Yes, absolutely. So my name is Negin Hassam-Shariati. And I'm a research fellow at the School of Psychology at the University of New South Wales and Neuroscience Research Australia. So my background is coming from biomedical engineering, actually. And then I went into more medical sciences and now pain research. So my work is focused on chronic pain and pain after spinal cord injury. And interestingly, for the name Brainwave, my research focus at the moment is more on the brain side of pain. And we are trying to target the underlying mechanisms of chronic pain to treat it. But I'm also increasingly interested in the psychological and social side of pain to fit into the picture.
You recently co-authored an article exploring the connection between psychological and social well-being and pain following spinal cord injury. Would you like to give us a brief overview of the study and its aims? And were there any particular types of spinal cord injuries your research focused on?
Yes, absolutely. So this was a huge review. We looked at 78 studies with nearly 20,000 participants with spinal cord injury. And what we wanted to do was to just pull together all the evidence that's out there about the relationship between pain and psychological and social factors after spinal cord injury. Because there were, over the years, there are all those bits and pieces about this, but no one had pulled all that together to look at the pattern. And about the second part of your question, we included all types of spinal cord injury in this review, like traumatic injuries coming from car accidents or falls, non-traumatic injuries coming from an illness, for example, and all sorts of like different levels of injury with different severities. But what we specifically included was chronic spinal cord injury, so which is spinal cord injury with more than 1 year after injury. Because in the first year, in the acute phase, there's a lot going on medically and emotionally. So we try to focus on the more than 1 year after injury when basically things have settled down about the injury and the loss of function. Now we could focus more on the pain, as you know, persistent pain that people have to live with.
What led you and your colleagues to explore the relationship between pain intensity and psychological factors among people living with spinal cord injury?
Well, there is this sense that, for example, like pain after spinal cord injury does not always match like what's out there for treatment. We know from decades of pain research that pain is not just a signal from the body to the brain. It's an experience that's shaped by everything else that's going on in someone's life, like their mood, their sleep, their relationships. So we realize that it's just not the physical part. So we have to also focus on the psychological and social parts of pain, and specifically for spinal cord injury.
Prior to this study, what had the psychological and neuroscientific communities understood about the relationship between psychological factors and pain intensity?
Well, quite a lot, actually. As I said, there was over the years, there was all these bits and pieces about this work, you know, but they were like smaller studies or smaller reviews, both for non-STI chronic pain and STI pain. But no one had pulled all the evidence together to make like a full picture. And that's what we did. Like we looked at all the evidence out there and tried to just find a pattern, if we can find a pattern with the relationship between pain and all these psychological and social factors.
In the study, you reference something called Craig's SCI adjustment model. What is Craig's SCI adjustment model? And did it shape or inform your current research in any way?
Yes, absolutely. So this model has been developed by Professor Ashley Craig from Kolling Institute, who has worked in this field for years and decades in Australia. He's actually one of our collaborators in the trials that we do with people with spinal cord injury pain. And the idea of this model is that the psychological adjustment after spinal cord injury is not static and it changes over time. So many things affect the way that people after spinal cord injury adjust psychologically. So it's dynamic and it's different for individuals. So the way that people cope, their personality, their pre-injury life, and how much support they have from others, they all affect this. So this also, this was very interesting because I, in my review, I found that time since injury, like the longer that you have lived with your injury, influences the relationship between pain and catastrophizing and also acceptance. So the longer that you have lived with your injury, the relationship between pain and acceptance gets stronger. And the relationship between pain and catastrophizing becomes weaker. So this is somehow quantitatively support what SCI, like Craig's SCI model is describing.
In your study, you mentioned that spinal cord injury related pain is currently managed through both pharmacological and non-pharmacological approaches. What do those treatments involve currently?
Well, it depends on the type of pain. People after spinal cord injury experience two different types of pain. One is nociceptive, which is musculoskeletal pain coming from muscles and joints. And that one could be targeted by like non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs and something like physiotherapy. But the other one is neuropathic or nerve pain, which is much harder to treat. And this one, for the medication side, we have like gabapentin, pregabalin, and also some antidepressants are prescribed in addition to opioid. And for the non-medication side, we have something like the psychological interventions and like non-invasive brain stimulations, spinal cord stimulations. There are lots of things that have been tried for this type of pain.
You also write that many of these treatments often remain resistant or ineffective for some people. Could you talk about what the neuroscientific community has observed regarding current pain interventions for people living with spinal cord injury related pain?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So as I said, neuropathic pain after spinal cord injury is one of the hardest to treat. And for the medications that I just named, the issue is that they work, but they don't work for everyone. Almost like one third of population might get partial benefit from these medications. And there are also like significant negative side effects from these medications. And also all those non-invasive brain stimulation and spinal cord stimulation, all those non-pharmacological treatments, there is no strong evidence that any of these work. There are some studies that say, yes, this one works. Some other studies say no. So there is no clear message here that if any of these actually work for pain after spinal cord injury.
You also mentioned that the cost of treatment and limited access to services can affect whether people receive adequate care. Could you speak to that a little further at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So from my previous response, I was just referring to different treatments. And from this review, we realized that, okay, pain is not just physical. It has also psychological and social factors involved in it. So we have to address all of them together. So like as integrative pain care. So this, I'm not saying that there is nothing out there. We have already specialized pain clinics, but most of them are in major cities. So for example, people in remote and rural areas don't have access to it. So that's one big challenge. On the other side, like interventions like those non-invasive brain stimulations can be really expensive, or the psychology sessions, for example, they are partly covered by Medicare, but for a limited number of sessions per year, so it's not completely accessible for everyone. So these are the issues that I think people who have pain after spinal cord injury are dealing with. And apart from that, they are also have mobility issues. They are in a wheelchair, so it might not be easy for them, for example, to go to the regular physiotherapy sessions.
Would you like to walk us through the methodology you and your colleagues used to explore the relationship between psychological and social well-being and pain after spinal cord injury?
Yes. So this methodology is called like systematic review and meta-analysis. So the review part is the way that it's systematic. It means that we look into a few electronic research databases, and we try to find all the studies out there that have looked at pain and psychosocial factors for people with spinal cord injury. After extracting all those, which in our case was over 12,000 studies, I guess, two independent reviewers and researchers would look at these studies and try to rule them out, either to include them or exclude them. So there is a very strict process going on. So if there is any inconsistency or discrepancies, a third reviewer would come in. So they have to get to a consensus before actually including a study if they don't agree. And then one other thing that I did for the review was that if studies had assessed pain and psychosocial factors but had not reported the relationship, I contacted the authors and asked them for the data so I could do the correlation and include that in my review. That's why it makes the review bigger and more comprehensive. For the meta-analysis part, so we have all the results and all these association and correlations, and we combine them all together across different studies. So for example, for pain and depression relationships, I had almost like 50 studies. So when you combine all those results together, you have a bigger picture of what the relationship between pain and depression looks like.
And from the data you analyzed, what did you discover about the psychological and social factors associated with pain following spinal cord injury?
So we found a pattern. So we, as I said, we already knew from chronic pain literature that, yes, higher pain intensity is associated with higher depression, anxiety, fatigue, more sleep problems, and also lower quality of life, lower acceptance, lower resilience. But we found a pattern so that none of these associations are huge by themselves. But when they all point the same way, that's what makes the message strong. That pain after spinal cord injury is not just physical. It has all those psychological and social factors associated with it.
Your analysis also revealed that sex may play a role in spinal cord injury-related pain. Could you talk a bit about that?
Yes. So what I did is that I looked at the influence of all those individual related characteristics like sex and age on the relationships that we found. For sex, we found that, for example, in studies with a higher proportion of men, the relationship between pain and anxiety was bigger, and also the relationship between pain and anger was stronger. On the other side, in studies with more female participants, we saw that the relationship between pain and social support became weaker. So this is about the pattern across studies. It's not about like differences between individual men and women. So I want to be clear in that regard. These are just the patterns that we saw across these studies.
And age was also found to be an indicator of the level of pain a person with spinal cord injury might experience. Is that correct?
Well, with age, we didn't find much influence actually on the relationships. It was just, I think, one relationship that was influenced by age, and it was pain and self-efficacy. And self-efficacy is the ability of someone's like feeling belief that they can control their pain and their life. So with studies with older participants, the relationship between pain and self-efficacy was weaker. So because the normal relationship is that with higher pain, we have self-efficacy. But in studies with older participants, that relationship was weaker. So one possibility is that people who have lived more with that injury and that experience, they are more capable of handling the pain, you know, and managing it.
And you also mentioned, you sort of went over this a bit before, but you also mentioned in your study that the time since injury occurred may influence the level of pain someone experiences. How does time affect pain following spinal cord injury, and why might that be the case?
Yeah, that's exactly what I said after the Craig's SCI adjustment model, because we realized that the way people relate with their pain after injury changes over time. So the longer they have lived with their injury, they are more capable of, you know, accepting the pain, you know, accepting not as giving up, but accepting that how can I live well alongside pain, and also catastrophizing less.
Now that this study has been completed, what are the next steps for you and your colleagues in exploring this topic further? And how would you like others in your field to approach this research going forward?
Yes, absolutely. Because, with this review, we were looking at, you know, snapshots in time with the relationships between pain and all these psychosocial factors. So it would be great if more longitudinal studies were done, when you basically look at the same group of people over time and see how pain and all these psychosocial factors influence each other, rather than taking that snapshot in time. And also, we would like to see more intervention-based studies. And that's what we are actually doing in our team. We are trying to develop and test more interventions for people who have pain after spinal cord injury. So here I want to basically say, talk about our NeuroSTIM trial, in which we are actually trying to test two non-invasive brain-based interventions for people who have pain after spinal cord injury, and we're really hoping to find something there.
Yeah, what is an intervention-based study? What is that, you know, in your field, when you're talking about an intervention-based study, what does that usually look like?
Well, it's normally a randomized controlled trial when you have two groups of people, and one group will receive the intervention that you are offering to them, and the other group will go on with whatever that they are already using, you know, for their pain. Is it medication or any types of non-pharmacological treatments? And for the one group that receives the treatment, it could be any types of treatment that we are offering. In our case, we have different trials. And the NeuroSTIM trial that I just talked to you about, we are trying to test a non-invasive brain stimulation plus neurofeedback. And this neurofeedback intervention is what I said, we are trying to target the underlying mechanisms of chronic pain, because in chronic pain, we know that the communication between thalamus in the middle of the brain and the cortex is disrupted. And that disruption can be detected by electroencephalography, the electrical brain activity. Mm. And by regulating those abnormal brain signals through a neurofeedback game, we're trying to normalize those signals and ultimately reduce pain.
Mm-hmm. So could you compare did you describe it as an invasive
non-invasive approach? Actually.
Could you compare what a non-invasive intervention looks like and an invasive intervention? Could you compare what those might look like?
Well, I describe the brain stimulation as non-invasive. It means that there is nothing going on. Like, you have a headset on your head and you receive very mild stimulation over your brain. Invasive could be something that's actually like intervention could be done through your scalp, mm. you know, touching.
So it's surgical.
Brain. Yes. Yeah. There is some surgery going on. That's definitely not my area of expertise. That's why I'm not comfortable explaining that at all. But what we are doing, we always try to say that it is completely non-invasive. There's nothing going on.
Yeah.
That's really scary.
So for this upcoming, the further research that it appears that you have planned down the line, will you require participants for these studies and to continue developing the understanding of the relationship between, you know, psychological and social well-being and pain following spinal cord injury? And if so, how could someone volunteer to take part in any research that you might have planned?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Well, we have our website. It's called neurorecoveryresearch.com. And if you go on it, you will see a list of clinical trials that we are conducting. Some we are already recruiting. Some we will start recruiting later this year. So people could go through the clinical trials, read through them. There are we've tried to explain them in simple words. And if they are interested in any of them, they could register their interest through the webpage. So I encourage anyone who have chronic pain or pain after spinal cord injury to go on our website. As I said, we have a neurostim trial for people who have pain after spinal cord injury specifically. And we also have pain and emotion therapy, which is a psychologically informed intervention. And that one is for anyone who has chronic pain in general. Mm.
If you're able to, for someone who has actually never volunteered for, you know, to take part in a trial like this, what does it usually look like, the process? You know, what can people expect when they do register their interest, you know, and, you know, can you work us through the steps on what they would be doing from each stage of the process?
Yes, absolutely. So when they register their interest and when we are ready to recruit, we will email them. Normally, the first contact will be through email, and we will ask them if they are interested still to take part in the trial. We could schedule a phone call with them to go through the details of the trial and see if they are actually eligible to take part. So that would be a phone call. And after that, if they are eligible, then they will be, when there is a randomized control trial, they will be randomized into the groups, because there might be two groups, three groups, or four groups of trial that's going on. And then we will go from there. Then the whole trial will start, and they have to fill in some questionnaires at different time points. And then for the treatment part, is normally, I don't know, for the neurostim, it's 5 weeks of treatment. For pain and emotion therapy, it's 8 to 9 weeks. So they will be involved in the treatment, and normally after the treatment, we will also have some questionnaire that they have to fill in, and we normally have follow-ups as well, 6 months or 12 months follow-up, that we will ask them to fill in the same questionnaire that they had already filled in. Yeah. So yeah, I think this is the whole thing.
And could you what was the address that people could find to see which trials you do have going and to register if they're interested? What's the website again?
It is Neuro Recovery Research. So neuro as in N-E-U-R-O, recoveryresearch.com.
Awesome. And finally, if our listeners would like to learn more about your work and any future developments in this research, where can they follow your work?
Well, apart from the website, which they can find all of us, they can also maybe follow me on LinkedIn. I normally post about what we are doing and our publications and everything. So it's under my name, Negin Hassam Shariati.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Negin. I really appreciated you joining us on Brainwaves this evening to share a bit about what you're researching at the moment. And look forward to staying up to date with what you do learn about how people can manage, you know, any kind of chronic pain. I think any listener that does experience chronic pain will be really appreciate that there are people that are exploring ways of, you know, taking some of the discomfort that they experience in their daily life and have just to make things easier. But yeah, thank you so much.
No, thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Brainwaves. You can find more of our shows at the 3CR website, 3cr.org.au, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to send us feedback or suggestions for shows via email at brainwaves@wellways.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next Wednesday at 5 p.m. for another episode of Brainwaves on 3CR.